WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The Israel-Iran war is into its second week, and Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, asked about any potential U.S. involvement, said,
"That would be very unfortunate, and I think that would be very, very dangerous for everybody."
He said Iran is willing to talk but would not negotiate with the U.S. as Israel continues military strikes. Meanwhile, President Trump's not decided if the U.S. will get involved. He is meeting with national security officials later today. Vice President J.D. Vance traveled to Los Angeles, where a legal fight continues in California over the Trump administration's use of federal troops to protect immigration enforcement officers in the state. The Palestinian activist Mahmoud Khalil, who was detained for more than 100 days, has been freed from a federal facility in Louisiana after he was granted bail. It's become a symbol of the president's clampdown on campus protests. Three people were killed in severe weather in Cass County, North Dakota. This is ABC News. A federal bankruptcy judge approved a $7 billion settlement for OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma to settle thousands of lawsuits over the toll of addiction. Settlement will now be sent to local governments, people who become addicted, and other impacted groups. Last year, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected a version of Purdue's proposed settlement. A grand jury in Colorado returned an indictment against Barry Morphew almost 5 years after his wife, Suzanne, vanished during a bike ride near her home. ABC's Zareen Shah has more.
Morphew was arrested in May of 2021, but a year later, just days before the trial, charges were dropped after the district attorney said the state did not have enough evidence to move forward without Suzanne's body. Suzanne's remains discovered in a shallow grave near Moffat, Colorado. Her death ruled a homicide. Investigators say Suzanne had been having a secret affair and discussed plans to divorce Barry Morphew with her close friend.
I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Remembering Vietnam, brought to you by The Dispensary.
One day we started heading back to dock towing some wounded guys in the truck, and the company commander said to stop the convoy. He said, "Where are the bodies?" We had two guys killed, and they had been left lying back there. That can't happen. So the captain said, "We need some guys to go back and get them." I'm thinking, "I hope it's not me." And sure enough, he says, "Brzezinski, come with me. We're going back to pick up the bodies." And I'm like, "Captain, what do you mean? Can't we take the truck?" He said, "No, because they would just blow it up and we can't afford to lose that truck." I took my helmet and flak jacket off. I could never run in those things, although I knew one well-placed bullet could kill me. And we started running back to the bodies. Mike Brzezinski, United States Army, Vietnam.
Hear this full story at WGBW.FM. Click on Remembering Vietnam. Brought to you by The Dispensary. Online at thed8dispensary.com. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shalia Pittman. The Wisconsin DNR is investigating a manure spill from Bruggen Dairy Farm in Monroe County. The spill killed hundreds of fish and contaminated healthy waters frequented by fishers. For more, here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
State officials are investigating a manure spill in Monroe County that polluted at least 8 miles of waterways in southwest Wisconsin, killing hundreds of fish and contaminating Spring Valley Creek, Moore Creek, and the Kickapoo River. A massive rain event triggered the runoff from Bruggen Dairy Farm, a 600-head dairy operation near Norwalk. Ben Uvas with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says the farm took measures to protect the soil, but the combination of intense rain and recent manure application caused it to spill into nearby water.
Very localized and a very high intensity rainfall event hit that field, and that was what moved manure off the field down into concentrated flow channels, grass waterways, and eventually off the field into Spring Valley Creek.
The spill was reported through an anonymous tip line to the Wisconsin DNR last month. Hundreds of fish were killed, including prized trout habitats. Farmers apply manure to their fields as fertilizer, but overapplication can cause risks for drinking water and local wildlife. The dairy operation treated about 130 acres of farmland, with nearly 1,200 gallons of manure per acre, manure, which is within the DNR's acceptable standards. There have been at least 9 documented manure spills in Wisconsin this year. A 2022 investigation found that more than 1,500 miles of waterways and 33 lakes in Wisconsin are impaired due to manure and commercial fertilizer pollution. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. This story was produced with original reporting from Nina Elkadi for Sentient.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Fox Valley Forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. A heat advisory today. We'll have a high near 93. Heat index will feel like 100. A strong southwest wind up to 40 miles per hour. Clear, breezy, 80 is all we drop to tonight. Sunny and hot again tomorrow with a high of 95.
Currently, 75 degrees.
Lean Local with Jim Schmidt.
June is Men's Mental Health Awareness Month. We're with a great organization called Brothers Helping Brothers with Jason Wright Sr. and DeLorean Walls.
Sunday afternoons at 1 on 97.9 WGBW and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Maggie Dawn Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
You're listening to the best of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade, Distant Thunder. My colonized name is Robert Pilot. We discuss national and local Native American news and events. As we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade.
I cut a gate to all my friends and relatives in 4 directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Wendy, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Development Institute, or use the acronym NACDI. They're on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis.
Great partners in Native Roots Radio, and we have the CEO, Robert Lilligren, on every Thursday. Hey, speaking of every Thursday, every Friday we have State Senator Mary Kunish on, but we asked her if she could come on and speak to what happened this weekend. We're all sad here, and we really, really appreciate State Senator Mary Kunish coming on a few days early, and you'll have your normal slot on Friday, but I thought it'd be really important to touch base with you and check in on you and check on what's happened in our community. Welcome, State Senator.
Thank you, Wapulatanka. It's been a really hard couple of days, not just for myself, but for legislators in general, for elected officials, for our communities, our state, our nation. It's been tough.
Well, you know, we thought about you right away and reached out as soon as we heard on Saturday, and you were okay. So all this kind of transpired early in the morning Saturday, like 2 or 3 in the morning. And I'm sure people reached out to you and you did precautions with your family. Can you talk us through that a little bit and what you heard right away?
Sure. It started in the wee hours of the morning. We were contacted by our leadership. I'm an assistant majority leader in the Minnesota Senate. And so our leader and administrators reached out to us to let us know something had happened. There weren't a lot of details, and we didn't know exactly everybody that was involved in the shootings, but just warning and to be alert. And we kind of did the phone tree to let others know the circumstances so that, the two, and what we're talking about is Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette were shot by a gunman in the early hours of Saturday morning, and then he left there and went over to the Speaker Emeritus for our Minnesota House of Representatives. She and her husband were assassinated. Mm-hmm. We didn't know all the details. You know, at one point, we didn't know who was alive, who wasn't, but it looked like there was something going on targeting legislators. And so we wanted to be extra careful and let each other know what was going on. We all sat tight, listened for any updates, anything like that. And in a very short time, many of us were contacted by our local municipal police to check in on us to make sure we were okay, and let us know that they were monitoring the situation, but they were also monitoring our communities as well. And I, for one, want to thank the New Brighton police. They were very responsive and had a number of my house in a very surveillance around my house. But they also, you know, were counseled or suggested that if we had a safe place to go, maybe we wanted to leave our homes. And so I did. I left my home and I went to a safe spot. I really didn't want to get my neighbors involved in this. We just didn't know what or who we were dealing with. And it was just better that we weren't home. And so I did. I went somewhere safe and monitored and was kept up to date as best they could as time went on. And again, thank you to the New Brighton police who reached out, updated us, made sure we were okay. It was a most bizarre couple of days, I can tell you that.
I can't imagine.
Well, and I were really flipping the coin about going to the Capitol that night too, because the governor, you know, for safety reasons, told us not to go to the march at the
protest,
Capitol.
The No Kings protest at the Minnesota State Capitol, but we really felt like in the honor of the people who were hurt and killed that we needed to, needed to be there.
Well, I'm glad there wasn't any retaliation to people that were counseled not to attend. Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense. But those of you that did go out there to show that solidarity, that was not lost on us. Let's say that much.
Right on. And the timing was terrible because it was almost like they wanted us not to go, the assassin and the big plan that they had. So on the same day, we took notice that wasn't a coincidence, and we needed to follow through. Like 80,000 other Twin Cityans went to the Capitol, and all the other No Kings I saw all over the state that people were there. And so it's just the beginning of this. I mean, this rhetoric that's happening nationally is really frightening, and now we're seeing big globs of action that's coming from just this negative stuff from Washington.
I mean, I don't know if, I haven't paid attention to what the federal response is to any of this. I don't know if there is any. You know, Minnesota, almost all of our, three of our federal officials are, is it three or four, are Democrats. And of course, I'm sure they're hearing things at the federal level, but I don't know if the president has said anything about this, or if any of his, Republican leadership or anybody has. I don't know that any of our Republican leadership here in Minnesota has said anything. To tell you the truth, I never thought of that.
Well, there's been some negative responses locally here that I don't want to get into the negativity, because we hear it so much daily. I just want to really check on with you and also your processing, because I know Wendy and I are peripherally involved with this by just supporters and how we feel right now. We really
put out tobacco for you, Mary, and all our other political friends here.
You know, I can't even tell you how many people. I mean, I'm pretty sure the day of Saturday, I sat and texted reply after reply after reply after reply after reply. I mean, all day yesterday and today, yesterday, Saturday, and today, people are still reaching out from all over the country. I mean, all even international people I know internationally have reached out to me with words of, you know, kind of horror of the situation, not wanting, you know, not asking what's going on, give us a buzz. It was like, I'm there for you. If you need anything, please let me know. Our prayers are with you. We're thinking of you. The thoughtfulness is just unbelievable.
It's lovely.
Hey, we're here with State Senator Mary Kunish, a little special edition of Monday at Native Roots Radio, and we're going to talk a little bit more. I know you're really busy, and but we appreciate you stopping in and letting our audience know, you know, just knowing how you're doing, and we really appreciate it. Hey, Wendy, this is Native Roots Radio, and we're going to be right back.
Stay with us.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. For the last few months, Governor Tony Evers has said repeatedly that he would make a decision about whether or not to run for a third term after the state budget process is completed. In a recent opinion column at the Recombobulation Area, I made the argument that the decision that Evers should make should be to not seek a third term as Wisconsin's governor. This argument is not one of ideological differences or policy disagreements. Tony Evers has been a good governor and has served the state well. This more has to do with Evers' age. He'll be 75 years old in November 2026, and about how the Democratic Party has had a massive, inescapable problem in its unwillingness to pass the torch to the next generation. Tony Evers needs to do what so many other Democrats have struggled so mightily to do and step aside when the time is right. And after Joe Biden's catastrophic 2024, this is a conversation we need to be having, and we need to be having it now. Democrats can't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. It's time to do things differently.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Tom Hartman here. You're listening to 97.9 WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
I love that tagline. Hey, we're it's a special edition of Native Roots Radio right now, and we have State Senator Mary Kunish, who's usually on our Friday show, and she's been generous enough to come on and talk a little bit about what's happened this weekend, and also just talking maybe about the legacy of your colleague. And I really want to see how you're taking care of yourself. I know it's been a long session, a long, hard session, and kind of ending it with this has been really tough on you and everybody involved.
Yeah, it has been really very, very difficult. You know, luckily we have a really great caucus. Our Senate DFL caucus has been really supportive of each other. You know, we are all in a huge hurt, but we've been able to communication and dispelling, you know, inaccuracies, checking in on each other. It's been unifying in a lot of ways, but you know, we all are hurting, excuse me, hurting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I appreciate the work at those at the Capitol that are working to provide us with the kind of maybe mental health support. Should we reach out for it or need to talk to somebody about these things? This isn't something easy. It's not something we just have to kind of, you know, buckle up, you know, thing. These are real emotions. I mean, we almost lost one of our members, John Hoffman, and his wife. Mm-hmm. A really tough session to begin with right. the loss of our very, very special, beloved Carrie Dietzick, who passed away early in session. So, you know, it's still really raw for many of us. And then there are some of us that served in the Minnesota House with Melissa Hortman. When I was first elected to the Minnesota House, she was just elected as our leader in the speaker in the House. And, you know, she was a great leader. I mean, people will say these things about, you know, people, but really and truly, she was a leader. She led and built such cohesiveness within her caucus. It was amazing. I remember soon after I was elected as a newbie, she asked me to join her for lunch, and we sat for about 2 hours and ate lunch together, and she asked me about what my priorities were, what I wanted to work on, how the caucus could support us. You know, when I came quickly to realize that our caucus and the legislature as a whole were woefully lacking in understanding the country.
Right.
And anything about, you know, tribal relations or what the struggles are were at that time. And I could go to her and her team, and, you know, we worked on making sure that American Indian Education Aid was included. The Republicans, when they were in the majority, weren't going to include that in their budget, and we got them to do that. I brought up a lot of Native issues. Remember, it was in the House that I passed the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's Task Force. Mm-hmm. And Melissa was a huge champion. And there were, you know, again, I was new. Right. I didn't know how things work. I don't know how to start a task force, right?
Right.
And going to Melissa and to her team for guidance, like, what do I do? How does this work? And she's like, you're a legislator. You tell us what, you know, you tell them what you want. Mm-hmm. Like with them, I'm talking about governmental agencies and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. She really and worked on our behalf to make sure that did get passed as well. So that was under her tenure. Her heart was with people the most. She was a lawyer, so she had a keen legal mind. She understood about how to set things up for success and how to set people up for success as well. Very, very fundamental in building women leadership. I don't know if you remember that that incident, Sorry Not Sorry. Do you remember?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And it happened in the Minnesota House while she was, we were in the minority, and we were on the floor in the House, and there were like next to no Republicans, let alone Republican men, on the floor. And we were talking about the rights of American Indians and those that are struggling so heavily. And these guys were all in the back in the retiring room watching the Twins game.
Yeah.
And they should have been in their seats legislating and listening and learning. And she called them out. Very bravely, she called them out. And we just were in awe of her, the fact that she did that. And then the Republican leadership said, she was so disrespectful and rude to us. She needs to apologize. And I remember her coming to us and saying, you guys, should I? Was I in the wrong? Was I inappropriate? And we're like, hell no. And so she came back out and she said, nope, sorry. Not sorry. I'm not apologizing. And I think like that was a really defining moment for her. And the fact that she had her, she knew that the caucus had her back on these kind of things. And she just built out her leadership from there. And it's been really incredible. And I'm so proud to have worked with her, worked alongside her, been mentored by her, and to see what she actually grew into and the kind of, it wasn't power, it was really cohesion and helping people understand how important it was that the caucus stick together on these really important issues. And we all saw her crying when she explained why she had to vote yes on a bill to withdraw health care for undocumented Minnesotans. Yeah. Yep. And I mean, that was raw. She was in pain, as were many of us, but she did it to ensure that the other bills got passed, that we were able to balance our budget and that we did our job. And that was a huge personal, emotional, and professional concession from her. And we owe her a depth of thanks that we can never repay.
Wow, what a great tribute.
What a legacy, really.
Yeah,
that she left, you know, and it's just horrifying that this took place. It's just horrifying. I blame one person for this. One person.
Yeah.
I don't even have to
say
their name.
I know State Senator's stopping in here on her off day with Native Roots Radio. I just want to ask you what you're doing and your colleagues are doing for your own mental health, because again, I kind of started the whole show going, Wendy and I were crushed and we're more peripheral about all this. You know, of course we've met all these great politicians that work for the people, but you were close to them and worked with them every day. And also just the trauma of possibly somebody coming to your house, if you think through the whole story, right?
Yeah, I mean, I got up and I went to all my windows and doors and didn't even want to peek out, you know? Didn't even want to peek out. But I think a lot of us turn to our families. I know I turned to my family. My children were horrified. My family, you know, I come from this large family. Right. There was so much outreach and let us know what we can do to help you. If you need another place to go, if you need a safe place, come here, or I know somewhere that you can go. So we've, you know, I think a lot of us reached out to our, recognize the need and the care for each and every one of us. And as I said, they are setting up some mental health opportunities for us at the Senate. I know for me, last night we got together for a Father's Day gathering, and just for a little while, you could almost sort of forget. But I'm happy to say that there are many support systems out there for us. And I know that there are a bajillion people I can reach out to if I need it. So I just want to say Wopilatanka to all of them, all of you that have reached out to me, and please do so and say your prayers.
Thank you so, so much. And I know this is just so sudden afterwards, and I really appreciate you talking to our listeners like this and let them know that you're okay. And then also a great tribute that you just had. I really appreciate you and coming on today, especially.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator Mary.
Hey.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on air.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The Israel-Iran war is into its second week, and Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, asked about any potential U.S. involvement, said,
"That would be very unfortunate, and I think that would be very, very dangerous for everybody."
He said Iran is willing to talk but would not negotiate with the U.S. as Israel continues military strikes. Meanwhile, President Trump's not decided if the U.S. will get involved. He is meeting with national security officials later today. Vice President J.D. Vance traveled to Los Angeles, where a legal fight continues in California over the Trump administration's use of federal troops to protect immigration enforcement officers in the state. The Palestinian activist Mahmoud Khalil, who was detained for more than 100 days, has been freed from a federal facility in Louisiana after he was granted bail. He's become a symbol of the president's clampdown on campus protests. Three people were killed in severe weather in Cass County, North Dakota. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The crew crushed the Twins. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers in Minnesota this weekend for a series against the Twins. We'll have a recap of today's game coming up tonight. Last night, the Brewers jumped out to a 12-0 lead. They went on to win by a final score of 17-6. Christian Yelich set a franchise record, knocking in 8 runs batted in. And 23-year-old pitcher Jacob Mizorowski, in only his second start, had a no-hitter for the crew going into the 7th. Manager Pat Murphy says the kid talked him into going back out there one last thing before he gave up that 2-run homer in the 7th.
Absolutely. He was adamant. He wanted to go out for 7 ups. I want to challenge myself. Yes, I'm getting towards the end, but I want to challenge myself. And it was a good time to have him do that.
Did you tell him in advance he'd have a short leash going back out?
Yeah.
So in his first 2 starts, Mizorowski did not allow a single hit through the first 11 innings of his career, the first pitcher to do so in 125 years of professional baseball. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Fox Valley Forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. A heat advisory today. We'll have a high near 93. Heat index will feel like 100. A strong southwest wind up to 40 miles per hour. Clear, breezy, 80 is all we drop to tonight. Sunny and hot again tomorrow with a high of 95.
It's 76 at our studios.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Voting Rights Lab reports there were 59 state bills introduced on proof of citizenship for voter registration this year, and 160 bills concerning voter ID. A handful have made it near the finish line, but not all have passed. Since President Donald Trump's baseless accusations of mail-in voting fraud in 2020 and his unfounded claims of widespread non-citizen voting in the 2024 election, Republican-dominated legislatures have raced to pass stricter voter ID and proof of citizenship laws, despite no widespread abuse of either. In New Hampshire, versions of SB 218 were advanced, requiring submission of ID and proof of citizenship for absentee registration, and are now in a committee of conference. In Texas, a high-priority documentary proof of citizenship bill died without action at the end of the session. In Texas alone, there were 15 bills introduced to provide documentary proof of citizenship and 10 tightening voter ID laws. Nevada Governor Joe Lombardo surprisingly vetoed a bipartisan voter ID bill attempting to codify a widely supported ballot initiative. Democrats negotiated expanded ballot drop boxes in exchange for supporting voter ID. His veto statement said the bill did not address implementing voter ID for mail-in ballots. Wyoming and Indiana passed proof of citizenship earlier this year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Mark Sommerhauser, the communications director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, analyzing the impacts of the big brutal bill.
That number that you mentioned of nearly $15,000 per person, literally about a quarter of the state's economy.
Basically a quarter of the state's economy coming from the federal government. I'm not hearing from Republicans in the state in their biennial budget planning any sort of contingency plan for major disruption in federal funding coming into the state.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Maggie Dawn.
LGBTQ rights are under attack. At 4:30, Patrick Faribault from Our Lives Magazine joins to discuss what's at stake and how we celebrate pride right here in Wisconsin. Don't miss the Maggie Dawn Show.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute, or NACDI, in Minneapolis.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. And we are here with Ruth Anna Buffalo and her crew from Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. And Ruth Ann, this is just, I can feel their heart through these airwaves, and I really appreciate you bringing these guys on. Let's talk some more about what they do, Ruth Anna.
Yeah. So in the drop-in center, like Dietra mentioned, you know, they're one of the first points of contact for a lot of our relatives who come in who are unsheltered or unhoused, and so the work that they do is so critically important because it helps relatives feel safe and welcomed, and they get our client relatives connected to resources. You know, like Ellison mentioned, we have today's Tuesday, so we had our weekly resource connect from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. where breakfast and lunch is provided, and we have service providers on site. You know, Hennepin County Streets to Housing, MinOB Behavioral Health, Targeted Case Managers, and Avivo Village was there today. And then also LEAD was on site, Sobriety Warriors. It's a community effort, and we're, you know, providing a space for people to come together and help the relatives get connected to resources. We're just trying to do the best we can within our reach, because we all have a responsibility to help our relatives live, you know, and live longer.
That's awesome. And Dietra, I was there for the 40th anniversary open house, and I saw you there, and it was amazing how many community people showed up for that. That was beautiful.
Yeah, I was in awe too, and it's also amazing to make those connections. It's like the community coming together like that, and connecting with each of the organizations is so important. There are times when I may not have a resource and I could just pick up the phone and call. Or now some of them, they come here now, and make those connections so that they don't have to wait, or they're being shoveled around to this place, to that place. Some of our client relatives don't have communication like cell phones and computers. Being able to make those connections like that is so amazing. And it's like right there, you know, so they don't have to go very far. And that helps us out too. And we're not playing phone tag or email tag. And then we, you know, it kind of gets tiring to them, and then they lose hope. And that's the one thing that we don't want to happen, is for our client relatives to lose hope, because we're fighting the fight with them, you know. Those resources and connections are very key. To potential success in helping our client relatives get to that next stage in their life. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Allison, you've been around for a year. You've gone through the bad part of the winter, and our unsheltered relatives showing up, and that must really be hard to see, but also really good on the heart that you're able to help.
Yeah, definitely. So I should mention this, but I have like a lot of experience with like our unsheltered, let alone with them like going through their struggle they're going through, because I'm also in recovery too. July 18th will be my 2 years being in recovery. It's easier for like, a lot of people outside of our work, like a lot of them don't understand, you know, so like for them to come to MIWRC and feel safe here, because like and with me being here in our drop in our all of our coworkers, you know, we, like Ruth was saying, we have an amazing team going here, and I'm grateful to be a part of that team, to be able to help, like, guide and support, like, our unsheltered to, like, to want better and to do better, you know. So, like, it's been a good experience being here at MIWRC. I've been here going on 3 months now, so I'm still a newbie. But it has been like it has been a good experience for me being here, and I'm grateful that Ruth, like, was able to, like, for me and to be able to work with, like, our unsheltered or even anyone coming through our doors in general, just being able to, like, make them feel welcomed here, make them feel safe, make them feel like as if they were at home, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to say is I have 40 years of recovery, and I think right 2 years is 2 years is a lot longer than I think 2 years is a lot longer than 40 years, because those days can be long, and you're a great representation, and also people can look up to you because you're doing it, and that's what our community needs, is to see more warriors like you, Allison, that are doing it on the daily deal.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. And so, like, in a lot of our client relatives that do come in, you know, like I was saying, like, I know a lot of them only because, like, I was in active use at one point. So, like, a lot of them that, and because our community, like, when our community comes together, they come together. And when that does happen, it's such a beautiful thing to see. You know, and a lot of them come in and they'll be like, you know, I'm going to get there one day. And I'm like, yeah, you will, you know, you definitely will. And just keep speaking that into existence or manifesting it, you know, because, like, a lot of our relatives who are struggling right now, a lot of them want it so bad. It's just that step that they have to take, you know, because mm-hmm. it's a hard step to take. And I don't blame them, because I was at that point at one time, you know.
Exactly.
And they'll get there, you know. All we can do is keep being supportive and being a good having our doors open like we've been, you know.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations again. That's a huge deal, and 2 years is a long time. It's a lot longer, again, like I said, than 40 years. It's Ruth Anna, it's great to have these guys on and talk real talk.
Yes, for sure. I'm super thankful. You know, it's an amazing team, and we kind of joke and say, you know, they're a bunch of Care Bears, you know. But yeah, they have superpowers. So, you know, they just, their heart, you know, heart work, you know, some days are challenging, and, you know, with, you know, things that kind of tug at the heartstrings, you know, but mm-hmm. we support one another, and we're thankful to have a good support system, and, you know, our traditional values that have withstood the test of time are there for us as well. And, you know, I was just talking to my family about the parade, and it was fun to, like, be out there and dancing and things. You know? Yeah, it was, you know, it's just good time, good medicine for sure.
Well, your name will always be on the trophy because you guys won it the first time, Ruth Anna.
Yeah. Bragging rights, I guess.
Right. So Jaleesa and I are going to try and get a float next year, a Native Roots Radio float, and we're thinking about maybe having a big boombox on her car.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, for sure. There's
with an really eagle feather hanging from it. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Ruth Anna, I'd like to, I don't know if you want to keep these guys on, because really what I'd like to talk about now too is the services that you have and the things that are coming up this week. So this is your call if you want to ask them a few more questions, or if you want to get right into that, how people out there can support Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center and the great work that obviously Allison, Deitra, and you and the whole crew do.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. You know, like, our website is on the link down there, the banner. So yeah, miwrc.org has a lot of our good information, connects you to the socials. So yeah, if Deitra and Allison would like to stay on for another segment, for sure, I support that.
Right on. That's very cool. So what would you say to somebody that Deitra that just came in and really feels down about stuff, and how do you greet them, and how do you tell them that it's going to be okay?
Definitely with empathy and compassion. Compassion for sure. Being a good listener, paying attention to them. You know, they go through so much out in the streets, you know, just having that genuine compassion goes a long way. And it works for me. I actually sit down with them and I listen, and I don't care how horrible the story may be, you know, I'm still just like right there and letting them know that whatever I can do in my power, that I will do it, and standing on that, you know. I don't care if they come one day and I don't see them for a month. I remember, you know, what they talked about, what they were dealing with. And even if we have to jump right back in and just try to help them to the best of my ability. But like I said in the first part, is building those strong relationships are super important, because mm-hmm. they learn to trust you and they're depending on you. And, you know, sometimes, yes, it tears at our hearts. Like, you know, yeah. there's stories I've heard that I've had to run to the bathroom and maybe shed a tear, but mm-hmm. letting them know that I'm there, and the rest of my colleagues as well. I will say this, we do have a very amazing team. Everybody is so compassionate, and they care about every single client relative that walks through that door, and that matters. And the community knows this. As mm-hmm. Allison was saying, you know, they know where to come when they need that, or to feel safe and to feel cared for. So yeah, I would just say being there, listening, being a good listener, no judgment. They go through enough of that. And trying our best to help them as much as we can, and never giving up. Because I like I said, I may see one client relative on a Monday and I may not see them for 3 months. But when they walk back through that door, I remember them and I remember what they were going through. And we just pick right back up and we fight the fight. So
right on, yeah. Right on. Appreciate those good words. Allison, I wanted to ask you kind of a different question with we got a minute left here. What do you do to take care of yourself? Because this is hard emotionally when you see people down.
Yeah, good question.
It's crazy you bring that up, because we were just actually talking about this in one of the offices yesterday. So like, I've been like more connected on like on my cultural side. So like before I leave the house, I smudge, I put cedar in my shoes, and like even if we're having a bad day at work, you know, I'll go home and take a cedar bath. I make sure I use my medicines, because it helps a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, and I go get my nails done, get my hair did, you know.
There you go. Yeah. Well, you have to give it away to keep it, and I know. I still go to those 12-step meetings, because we have to talk strong to our relatives and be there. And I remember my first meeting 40 years ago, somebody told me that I was the most important person there. And you know what? I believed them and I kept coming back. Hey, we're here with Ruth Anna Buffalo and her crew, Allison and Deetra, and of course, Jaleesa McKee, my daughter. Nepotism's living live and well here in Native Roots Radio. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk some more.
Stay with us.
Ho!
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Hey, Appleton, it's time to come alive with music. It's Amanda with another new WISCO 411 for you, brought to you by Area 509 in Appleton. And this Saturday is Make Music Day. It's part of a worldwide celebration that takes place in over 1,000 cities in more than 120 countries. And Appleton is opening up College Avenue to have musicians and events, and everyone is invited. You can come listen to the music, or if you're a musician yourself, you can participate. Head to WGBW.fm and click events to find out how.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns. It's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at HazeldenBettyFord.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
From Hobart to Bay Settlement, 97.9 WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Governor Walz. Thank you for listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
In this portion of the show, we'd like to bring awareness to our Minnesota wolf population. Say no to the hunts.
Oh. Allison and Deetra, that's where you were supposed to howl. Welcome back. Hey, we're here talking Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center with our guest Ruth Ann Buffalo, Anna Buffalo, and Allison and Deetra, and of course, Jaleesa McKee's here helping me hold down the fort. Wow, hold down the fort. That's not a good thing to say. That's kind of holding down the, yes, we're doing good here. Thanks, Ruth, Anna. How's it going? This has really been a great show. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I feel so much heart from you and also the people that work at Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center.
Yeah, for sure. We're, thankful to be here and for you allowing us to share a few good words about MIWRC and get the word out into the community. And also want to encourage, people, if they can, to donate, miwrc.org/donate. We've been around for 40 years and we will be around for 40 more plus years and beyond, still serving the relatives. And we're just, it's a beautiful organization to be a part of, a lot of healing, a lot of trust building, with relationships and really helping get relatives connected to resources, like treatment, addiction services, housing, behavioral health or mental health services as well, and just trying to expand on those, but of course incorporating or integrating our traditional values and teachings into those as well.
Ruth, Anna, I know you talked about the round dance and the workers coming down and round dancing during the celebration there. But tell some of our listeners that are just tuning in a little bit about what construction is going on.
Oh, yes. So the top two floors at MIWRC, floors 3 and 4, are under renovation, and they're coming along really well. We have, so we're moving from 14 2-3 bedroom units to 24 efficiencies, with 4 of them being single units. And we are on schedule, on target to have 6 units occupied by the end of August, this August. Things are moving along. We actually just kind of got a quick tour of third floor today. Things are going along great, and we're looking forward to serving the relatives, the best we can. Top two floors, floors 3 and 4, will be fully renovated. New windows, large, big windows, lots of natural light, fresh paint on there right now. Door frames are being added in. Furniture is going to arrive next week. So things are moving along really good.
Allison, how does that make you feel when you see something like that added on for the community? Isn't that like a game changer?
It definitely is. And I was just talking to a couple of our staff about how many more opportunities that our relatives can feel safe at, So it's it's definitely a blessing. Our community needs it, just because with everything going on and the things just clashing back and forth at each other in the community, we were saying earlier, a lot of our client relatives come here and they feel safe here. That's why they keep coming back. So it's definitely a beautiful blessing to have, to be here to experience and see the progress of it.
Yeah, it is, and I appreciate it and was able to see that firsthand. And it's an older building, and to have that life, Ruth Anna, put back into it, that's a really good thing, and that's how it can last for another 40 years.
Yes, for sure. Look forward to hearing, singing, dancing, looking forward to just more good, wholesome gatherings, where there's meals, there's healing, there's kids, there's laughter, there's community, mm-hmm. there's elders, there's teachings. So yeah, it's a lot of beautiful things coming.
And you know what I say? And there's cakewalk too. I love the cakewalk. Oh,
no, we all over at all of us at MIWRC, we clown about our, like, we joke about this all the time. Like, we all love Big Back activities over here.
Yeah.
Big Back.
I had to Google that at first. No, I'm just kidding.
That should be on your next t-shirt.
Allison's favorite word, Big Bang.
it's just another term for we all love different types of food, and we can throw it on when it comes to food.
Yeah, there you go.
That was funny. Oh my goodness. But I just wanted to say too, my background, I am actually a counselor at a treatment center. And so I just wanted to give you all the props for connecting people to treatment centers. So thank you. I actually, and even further, I actually started a Wellbriety group, a specifically Native-centric group at my job. So anyway, so awesome. I'm feeling connected to y'all when you share what you're doing. So thank you.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, I attend a Wellbriety meeting every week. It's every Thursday at the White Earth Mansion, and I'm making a priority to make it to a meeting just because I'm in recovery and I just don't want to lose those connections I already have there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've attended other meetings all around the community, but like that Wellbriety meeting, just I felt like really at home there, and I feel like it's because more connected with our culture and yep. and everything in it, and it's also like a home feeling when you walk in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's definitely part of what I asked you earlier, is how you take care of yourself, because you have to go to those to feel community and also give it away to the newcomer, because again, they're the most important person there.
Definitely. So my two years coming up, I'm actually like sharing my story at that Wellbriety meeting, like at the end of July. I'm gonna be sharing my story there.
That's so important too. Great. Because we gotta, I know for me, I have amnesia, when it comes to borrowing money or drinking and doing drugs. So I gotta remember all these things and keep going to these meetings. Ho-wah. So Dietra, you see people come in, but you also see people go out in a good way and get the help. That's gotta be part of what fills your soul too.
Yeah, it does. When our client relatives either go to treatment or find housing, it's a feeling I can't even describe. To watch the growth, I can't even describe the feeling. I think I'm more excited than they are. I'm just jumping up at the door like, yes, you got housing. Mm-hmm. Yes, you finally decided, I'm tired. Help me. How do I get to treatment? Which treatment? And mm-hmm. sitting down with them and going over the different options. And when they take that step, and you look in their eyes and you see the tears, but mm-hmm. they're tears of joy.
Yeah.
It's very emotional. It feels like it's me that's going, or it's me that's getting my apartment.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
On Monday's show, we'll talk with Brittany Merlot about this crazy midsummer weather and some racing talk straight from the pits. Mino and the Mayor, Join us.
Looking for food, fun, and live music this summer? Head to Area 509 in Appleton with Caribbean Taste. Every Friday, enjoy a food truck rally from 5 to 8 p.m. with live music from 5:30 to 7:30. Enjoy the Triple S Market, sip, shop, sing, every Sunday from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. With local artisans, open mic, guest food trucks, a full menu of incredible Caribbean taste food, charcuterie, mimosas, and more. It's all happening at 1025 North Badger Avenue. Come join the fun!
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Vice President J.D. Vance was in Los Angeles Friday. That's where Marines and National Guard personnel remain in place as protests continue over the immigration raids in Southern California. ABC's Melissa Adan has the latest from Los Angeles.
Protesters now enter their third week of calling for a stop to these raids, and the White House is not backing down. Small protests popped up across Los Angeles in response to the ongoing immigration enforcement raids. This after Vice President J.D. Vance was seen shaking hands and meeting with U.S. Marines deployed in Los Angeles.
It's the second week of the war between Israel and Iran. Israel says it's assassinated three Iranian generals in the last day and that it intercepted 40 Iranian drones overnight. President Trump will meet with his National Security Council as he continues to consider U.S. involvement. Severe weather in North Dakota blamed for at least three deaths in Cass County. This is ABC News.